Hello, welcome to a motoring podcast special for the 19th of October 2015. I'm Alan, and there's no Andrew with me tonight. Instead, I'm joined by Graham Davison. And we're going to talk all about, we're going to talk a little bit about some of this year's Formula E and how it may well differ from how you saw it last year. Graham, why don't you introduce yourself?
Good evening, Alan. Thank you very much. Yes, welcome everybody. My name is Graham Davison. I'm Vice President of Technology at Qualcomm over in Europe. And I am lucky enough to be the person that has worked with Qualcomm's investment, interest and sponsorship of Formula E for the last 2.5 years, providing technology support into Formula E as kind of their virtual CTO, providing advice, guidance on all aspects of technology. The lucky side of this, as a motoring fanatic myself, is I get to spend a lot of time in and around the various cars, drivers, teams, etc., and get to see what's going on.
Cool. No, that's great. So, last year's Formula E, it was the first season. As we all know and remember, it started in pretty dramatic fashion in Beijing. Which certainly got everyone's attention, I think.
It did. If they could have scripted a better story, I think none of us would have believed it. It was a fantastic race. Luckily, Nick was fine. Mm-hmm. It was a heart-stopping moment for everybody in the crowd.
And those of us watching at home as well.
But the great thing is it showed the integrity of the vehicles themselves, showed everything is safe, and all the safety equipment, all the safety procedures all worked fantastically. So that was a good message to take out mm-hmm. of that event. And then you had some fantastic close racing.
Yeah, it was good stuff to watch as a spectator from home. It was a great thing, great to watch. But last year, should we start off with the cars? Because last year, everyone was basically running the same car, weren't they?
Absolutely. Formula E is a spec series. So spec series says we take one car spec. It's set out by the FIA. The manufacturer that makes it, so the car is manufactured by a number of well-known names in the world of motorsport. So Dallara make the chassis. Mm-hmm. The battery is done by Williams. The motor is done by McLaren. So this was last year. We'll talk about what changes this year in a few minutes.
Yeah.
It was all then designed by Spark Technologies in France and then was assembled and system integrated by Renault. Mm-hmm. The tyres then provided by Michelin for everybody. So it was a one-off spec. Everybody ran exactly the same car. So the teams themselves had very little changes that they could do. They had suspension modifications, aerodynamic modifications, etc., etc. So they could do setup changes to the vehicle, but there was no changing of components, mm-hmm. etc. So the cars were exactly the same.
So that was last year and everything was the same. This year it's slightly different, isn't it? There are some changes, but
absolutely.
Some changes allowed and some things not allowed.
Absolutely, and the changes reflect very much, sir, a couple of major tenets that the FIA and Formula E are trying to address with some of the goals for Formula E. So if we look at what they're allowing and what they're not allowing for this year, we can quite easily see why they're doing it. So the changes are to do with the electric drivetrain. All the changes that go through that they're already talking about for season two, season three and beyond mm-hmm. are all to do with the EV components of the car. And that's because the FIA, Formula E, and everybody wants the manufacturers willing to put their hand in their pocket and spend their dollars, their euros, etc. to make their cars win. But they're going to spend their money on the EV components so that trickles through quite rapidly into the EVs that we will be buying and driving on the roads in a couple of years' time ourselves. So all the technology that people want people to focus on are EVs-type technologies. But the other side of that is the flip side of it, and that's one of cost control. You know, we've seen rampant cost control in many other motor racing series where you do get a disconnect between the top teams and the bottom teams about just how much they can afford to spend. Mm-hmm. So the FIA, when they're releasing the rules, effectively relaxing the rules and allowing the constructors to start changing things, are not letting it go as a free-for-all day one. So they're going to ripple through and allow aspects of the car to be fall into the Constructors' Championship, but not everything in day one. That then helps the teams control their costs in the early days and keeps the racing closer so that the teams with deeper pockets don't suddenly outrun the teams without the deeper pockets.
Right. So some of the changes to the EV package that you're talking about.
Yep.
So has everyone decided to go down the same kind of route, or have people branched off already?
No, it's fantastic to see, you know, and all the teams have taken a different view and aspect of it. So Constructors' Championship this year allows modifications to the electric drive motor itself, the gearbox, although there still has to be a gearbox. One of the rules quite clearly states you can't do away with the gearbox, you can't have direct drive. Now, that was an interesting one because the teams, a few of the teams actually wanted to go multiple motors direct drive, so literally a direct drive motor driving each rear wheel, software differentials and things like that. That is a spiralling cost curve.
It sounds like a lot of development.
It's a lot of development. So that may come as time goes by, but the idea was let's keep the gearbox in there, keep one motor effectively feeding in line into that gearbox through a hardware differential. So keep a hardware differential in there as well. So changes EV motor that we mentioned before. The inverter, which is effectively the chunk of electronics that's converting the DC current, the DC of the batteries, into the AC that the motor systems use. AC motors are used so that they can do regen. You can't do regen on a DC motor. So AC's in there. So motor, inverter, cooling is allowed in there as well. So as they as they brought in changes to the motor, they had to allow openness to effectively how they cool the whole package. Cooling is split into two sides on the Spark SRT01E car, the car we're talking about.
Yeah.
There's the battery cooling, then there's the alternate systems cooling, gearbox and motor. So they're allowed to do modifications to the motor and gearbox cooling, but not modifications to the battery cooling yet.
Oh, you've just explained something to me, which you probably told me about it at the start of last season, but which was why they seem to be putting loads of cooling into one side of the car at a time,
yes,
rather than both sides. Whenever you see them in the pits with all the snakes going all over the place, I hadn't realised that.
So yeah, if you look at the car, if you were a driver sat in the car, the radiator pod to your right hand side is the battery coolant radiator. The radiator pod to your left hand side is the motor and gearbox coolant. You see all the cooling being forced into the right-hand side radiator, and that's to do with improving the charge on the battery and being able to get a charge at a quicker rate into the battery side of things as well. So no changes on that side of the car, but changes to the left-hand side of the car as well. And then one other change that is allowed by implication, but is an interesting one, is that they are allowed to make some modifications to the rear suspension. Now, the FIA have been very careful on how they've worded the rear suspension changes. And these changes are allowed to facilitate the other changes. So as they've changed the motor, as they've changed cooling, they may have moved sizes may have changed the components, etc., etc. So they have allowed some flexibility on the rear suspension. But the overall configuration of the rear suspension stays the same.
So some geometry may need to change just because of the shape of a gearbox, for example.
Absolutely. Okay. So that's the main changes. And then after they've done all those changes, there's some rules changes to the amount of energy used and how energy gets used as well. So it'll still be the 200 kilowatt maximum system, and that'll be the energy used for qualifying. Race goes up from 150 kilowatts of last year to 170 kilowatts. So they're actually going to effectively be running with a 20 kilowatt more power during race than they ran last year.
Do we know how that will affect the racing yet?
So it's going to be interesting because the amount of energy that they're allowed to use, because effectively, remember, they're a 30 kilowatt hour battery, of which they're allowed to use 28 kilowatts. Think back to the very first races when the teams weren't quite sure how to do battery management.
Yeah.
Daniel Abt was disqualified from the very first race because he used 0.01 kilowatt hour over his allowance of 28 kilowatts.
Gee.
So they are still going to enforce that 28 kilowatt maximum amount of energy that they can use per car. What this means is you can use more energy to go faster, but you still have to control the overall amount of energy used. So the way to think of it from an internal combustion engine, you've still got X gallons, but you now effectively have more BHP.
Okay. Sure. That makes sense. I was trying to work back the 30 kilowatts. That's the same as a Nissan Leaf, isn't it?
It's about that,
It's about the new Nissan Leaf is 30 kilowatts. Yeah.
So that some of those changes are to do with continuing to improve the excitement of the race.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them do wrap into some of the changes that we're going to see in Fan Boost next year as well. So Fan Boost takes some changes as well to do with that. And also there's some changes in qualifying as well, how qualifying gets done. And that's all wraps into the more energy, how energy is used, etc., etc.
Do you want to explain some of the Fan Boost stuff? Because I think that maybe some of us who are more car-y aren't so good at joining in with some of the other aspects of the sport.
So Fan Boost was originally seen as a way of engaging fans with their drivers of choice, via social media, via any forms of connectivity. And it was interesting to see in the early years, especially in the very early races, how some of the teams would send a tweet out or a Facebook message a day before the race saying, "Vote for our drivers."
Yeah.
And they thought that was social interaction with their drivers. And then certain other teams really started to get it. They'd engage with the fans, the drivers would literally respond to tweets, they'd respond to messages on Facebook, they'd interact with people. And suddenly you start seeing those drivers getting way, way more Fan Boost bursts than the other teams that didn't get how to work with.
There was at least one team last year who really, really embraced the whole thing. In fact, I probably think of two. And it would almost, end up banter between them.
Absolutely.
And it was great.
It was great. You saw the teams sparking off each other, which was good. You saw the teams...
Not literally.
You saw the teams doing, literally investing time and effort into how they use their driver assets effectively and push them into people. And some of the drivers would, if the teams weren't very good at it, some of the drivers themselves were very good at it as well. So you saw it from a team perspective, you saw it from a driver perspective. So that was really interesting. It was all about pulling fans in and bringing them closer to the drivers, to their teams.
Mm-hmm.
The idea last year was you voted for a driver. Voting was... opened 12 days before the race, and it was closed literally an hour before the race. They then would work out the number of votes that people had got. They would then send a couple of guys out with a couple of laptops, reprogram the three drivers that had got the Fan Boost.
Mm-hmm.
They'd show it on the grid who'd got Fan Boost, and they would then actually have a Fan Boost for the first car and the second car.
Right.
So they could do it on both cars. This year, they're going for a much more live and a way of people actually changing the race. And this is unique.
This is brave.
This is FIA wobbling. Fantastic to see the foundations of the FIA actually being quite scary, but they've allowed it. Fantastic to see.
It's brave.
So verting continues into the race now. So it will actually continue 6 minutes into the race. So you've gone through start, you've gone through probably the first five or six laps, then verting finalizes, and the vert now is for the second car. That's where the Fan Boost goes. You vote to put the Fan Boost on the second car. So now you can vert for a guy that, your favourite driver that maybe didn't get a good start, guy that maybe has been cut up or something, that been forced in the back, can't get past somebody. And it's now you have the ability to change the race by your votes. So
that must make it so that must make it so challenging for the teams, because
so one of the things that Formula E have done, because they were concerned about cheating, for instance, people have mentioned it, what happens if one of the teams was to go out and register 100 email addresses and try and vote for their own drivers? Not that of course they would do such a thing.
No.
So what Formula E have gone out with it, and they've engaged a worldwide company that is involved in a lot of the large reality TV shows that we see where verting is done.
Mm-hmm.
Those reality TV shows are massively controlled legally about how voting goes on, how people vote. We saw years ago in the UK where people were still voting, but it was closed, they were being charged. Huge fines. Huge outcry for people saying, you took my vote, I wasn't affecting anything. There are now major companies that have set themselves up worldwide to do the big TV programs around the world. They are now assessed by financial and gambling bodies to make sure that their setup is absolutely the best they can be. They've got security, they can prevent cheating, they can prevent multiple voting, they have tracking capabilities as well, and it's real time. So that's what Formula E did. They went big. You know, if you're going to do it, you go large.
Yeah.
You get the best technology you can, and that's what they did on this one. So the rules is quite an interesting one. As I mentioned, they're going to be running at 170 kilowatts during the race, but they have the ability to go up to 200 kilowatts. On the second car, you get your fan boost. The driver, and this is really interesting, can decide how he uses it.
Right.
He still can only use it in one burst, so he can't, like, trigger it in multiple times and just use little bursts.
Uh-huh.
Once he hits that button, he uses it. But he can decide about whether it's a 30 kilowatts over 5 seconds, or whether it's 25 kilowatts over 7 seconds, or whether it's 20 kilowatts over 10 seconds, and he can do that on the fly. Once he knows he's got the fan boost, he can decide, is it an overtaking coming out of a corner thing?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a go faster down a straight thing? Is it go through a flat out set of corners thing? Now the driver has that extra little thing that he can play with, and he can use it effectively within the race to choose how he actually plays.
They say about all the best racing drivers have overhead there that they can work out all these things all the way around, and even just using the fan boost is fairly going to sort out the men from the boys by the sound.
Absolutely, you know, they're going to get a message saying they've got the fan boost for their second car. The team's immediately going to have to literally start working out the strategy. You know, is it an all-in-one? Is it a long and thin kind of thing? So, you know, the teams are going to be working strategy. The driver's going to be working strategy. It's going to be dependent upon the track. It's going to be dependent on the weather conditions. It's an interesting thing. It will change the second half of the race quite aggressively.
That's going to be quite something. Yeah. So how does that, you mentioned qualifying as well, how does that filter through from qualifying then?
Qualifying, they're going to go to what they call a super pole, which used to be used in a bunch of other motor racing series.
Mm-hmm.
So last year what they used to do is they drew the drivers' names and ran them in a series of groups.
Yeah.
So there was five qualifying sessions with four drivers, effectively. Now what they're going to do is there's going to be four qualifying sessions of five drivers.
Mm-hmm.
The top five drivers, so the drivers that get the top laps, go into a super qualifying group of five.
Ah.
They are then not sent out together. So the guy that was the fifth fastest gets sent out by himself. The minute he goes on to his flying lap,
mm-hmm.
the fourth fastest driver sent out.
Uh-huh.
The minute the fourth fastest driver goes on to his flying lap, the third one goes out, and it ripples back through that way. They will then get from that super qualifying, the positions of 1 to 5, positions of 6 through 20 come from the pool of racing that was done to start with.
Okay, awesome. That sounds good. One of the other things that was a bit of a feature of, it was more of a feature of some races than others, it was more of a feature of the early races, I felt, were the safety cars.
Mm-hmm.
And you were telling me just when we were chatting beforehand here that there had been a fairly hefty overhaul of some of those BMW safety cars.
So the BMW safety car that was used and seen quite a lot, as you said, especially in the early races.
Some of us even tried to start off a drinking game about it, and then were scuppered in the second half of the season when they didn't appear as much.
Absolutely, yes, and we were shocked actually because we all stopped drinking, so it was quite as much sadly. So what BMW did for that safety car was they took effectively a standard BMW road-going i8. They removed the rear seats. They put in a roll cage. They put in, they removed the front seats and put in a set of FIS spec rear seats with full 5-point harness. They then put a roll cage in there as well, and a set of light bars over the top for the light indications for the drivers, etc., and a radio for the guy to talk to the to the race director.
And there were a couple of great YouTube videos of people being given rides in that.
Yes, during lunchtime the cars would be borrowed from the FIA,
mm-hmm.
and various VIP hot laps would be given, and that was a fantastic thing for Formula E to do, because to see most people's faces after they go out of a BMW or even the i3s having been driven by a professional driver around a street race circuit, they suddenly realise how important, you know, the skill of these drivers were. You know, they have learned that circuit in literally two laps, and now they're racing on it.
Mm-hmm.
So this year's safety car, last year's safety car, it ran on standard brakes, it ran on standard BMW i8 street tyres, it had standard BMW brakes, it literally was a standard BMW bar the seating and the roll cage.
Yeah.
So this year what BMW did was they took that same car and they effectively decided to make it more sporty. So they lowered the suspension by about 20 mil, they put in a race-hardened suspension, they put in a very large set of ceramic Brembo discs, which look absolutely fantastic.
Sure.
Lowered the profile of the tyres, worked with Michelin to actually get a low-profile, semi-slick, semi-road, semi-racing tyre to go on the BMW i8. Increased some of the battery capacity and increased some of the electric capacity of the car as well. The wireless charging system that Qualcomm put on, if I may mention that, we also did some changes to that. So last year we had a 3-kilowatt charging system on there. This year we put a 7.2-kilowatt charging system on there as well. So when it comes in and sits there and wirelessly charges, it effectively charges at 7.2 kilowatts. So it charges in about double the time that it used to. About half the time. Double the rate. So that car is a fair bit more meaty on the road. And I was talking to Bruno, the safety car driver, when we got the car up at Donington. And he ran it out, and he's lucky enough to take me for a spin around Donington. And it is probably 4 or 5 times better on a circuit than the previous one was. And the other one was very good.
Yeah.
So that BMW i8, if we do see it out this year, that'll be a beautiful car running around there. Outside-wise, it looks exactly the same, though. That's the problem. But it's got a really nice set of rims on it, so you'll notice it from that side.
We'll notice the changes there.
Yeah.
No, that's absolutely awesome. Anything else that I've missed?
Well, I was going to say, probably one of the things to say, season 2 change, what else are we going to like? I think one of the major things we as spectators will see will be sound. So last year, all the cars sounded exactly the same. So, you know, because they were all spec car. So this year, if you look at the way the different manufacturers have addressed that motor design and the gearbox design, that will introduce a bunch of changes to us. So the rules allowed the concept of a twin electric motor design. It had to be axial inline, feeding the gearbox. Only one team took up that twin motor design, and that was NextEV TCR, Team China Racing. So they're going to be running effectively a low-speed, very high-torque accelerator way with a very high-speed, medium-torque on the straight motor that the car itself will swap and change between where most of the current goes as it's driving for efficiency so that it will be able to get more efficiency at the bottom end by lifting it out on the grunt motor and then running it into the higher revving motor at the end for running on the straights. And they'll actually move power backwards and forwards between those two motors. Then the rest of them have all gone for a standard motor. The major changes are in the gearbox. You know, they had to keep the gearbox. But it was interesting. Two teams, although they had to keep the gearbox, obviously didn't want to. So what they've actually gone with is one gear. So literally they've connected straight through. And you can hear it. So the teams that went with a single motor, a single gear, so NextEV, because of the two motors, went
single gear.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Virgin did as well. So Virgin, with the work they did with Citroën DS, from all the EV work that Citroën are doing, they went with a single gearbox, a single gear in the gearbox as well.
All right.
Some of the other teams have gone with two gears. So Renault, we believe, it's been very quiet, and it's not sure, but just listening to it, we think Renault has also gone with a two-gear gearbox. And then Venturi, that provides the same motor to Dragon, they've gone with four. Last year it was a five-gear gearbox, so they've dropped it down to four, so they've dropped a little bit out. Now, a gear change takes about 0.05 of a second, so by dropping those gears out, they will change the responsivity of the car to the driver at any one time. Now, it's only 0.05 of a second, but those make differences when you add them all up across the whole of the lap. Mahindra went with four as well, from what we can gather. So it's interesting to see that. ABT, which is the one that during Donington testing I think, surprised a lot of people because they ran more laps than anybody else by a good amount. You know, they ran in excess of 800 laps during the test sessions, but they also set the fastest time. They actually went with a 2, possibly 3 gear. Now, that's an interesting one.
Oh, right. Okay.
Depends who you talk to. We think it's a 2-gear racing configuration with a 3rd gear that is really low-end just for pulling away, maybe pit environment and things like that. But race is effectively a 2-gear race, and they'll never drop down to the 3rd gear, which is literally just a trolling-type moving gear. So it's an interesting one to see. And then you've got the guys that have stayed the same. So, you know, the ones we know that have stayed the same are obviously Aguri. They announced right at the very beginning they're going with a Season 1 car. No changes whatsoever. We don't know what Trulli's doing. Trulli did 7 laps during the whole of the Donington testing, and they did that on the last day, and none of them were competitive.
Oh, right.
So, you know, they'd gone with their own gear, their own motor and everything. So we just don't know what they're doing. They've announced that they're going to run their configuration for the first 3 races as part of their continued testing. Nobody knows what that means. You know, are they going to be competitive, or are they going to give up and move to somebody else? We just don't know.
I assume that people aren't allowed to change their setup on the way through the year.
That is the spirit of the rule. Yes.
Okay.
Once you start the configuration for the year, you stay with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Formula E is about, you know, everybody being there. So you know, who knows whether they may get a rules relaxation as time goes by. You know, the last thing we want to do is see a grid drop from 20 cars to 18 cars because one team is no longer competitive and just can't compete. So we'll see how that goes.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Fantastic. So just quickly to round off, remind me when the first race is. It's Beijing, isn't it?
Beijing, yeah. Next week.
Yeah. So
I get on an aeroplane on Wednesday morning and fly out there, and my Saturday will be watching that race and having a good time.
And here in the UK, it's still on ITV, isn't it?
Yes, it will. Yes. It'll be on ITV, and it's also on BT as well. So BT Sports are also showing it this year.
Excellent. Graham, thank you so much for time. I was going to say your time and effort, but thank you so much for your time and your efforts. What's the best way for people to keep following anything you're saying or Qualcomm?
Obviously, Qualcomm, all the teams, myself, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, etc., etc. Follow the Formula E website, you know, that's got where all the real good information is, etc., etc. And of course, this blog.
Brilliant. Thank you. Yes, of course. So, as you hear at the end of every episode, we're at motoringpodcast.com, and you can keep up with me personally on at AJP Bradley. So, until the next one of these specials, and we're back to normal on Wednesday night, but until the next one of these specials, good night.